where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
They say it's your birthday. It's my birthday too.
Was it your birthday?
Yeah, not when they're listening to this, but it was yesterday.
Did you have a good birthday?
I did. I spent the weekend in Vegas.
Did you enjoy your weekend in Vegas?
I did. I have a hot wife.
You do have a hot wife.
So it was it was wonderful. From a gig in San Diego and a short jaunt up to Las Vegas. But on to more important matters. There's a phrase out there that's been known for centuries, and we have a discrepancy in the household here.
You remembered. I thought you were going to forget.
See you later, alligator. What comes next? Is it after a while, crocodile, or in a while, crocodile?
I think...
In a while.
Oh, the worst.
I'm trying not to say which one of us feels that the after belongs in that poem. Maybe we shouldn't say this time, because then...
Well, we know now, because I disagree with
Wayne. You have more fans, and, you know...
I pay well. So, listeners, let us know. Is it after a while, crocodile?
It's definitely in a while.
Which is correct.
In a while.
Or is it in a while, crocodile? These are the things... Which is made up.
A whole extra syllable.
Yeah, that's what I said. This is what Scott and I argue about before we go to bed. We had a big argument as we're recovering from a little jet lag, little time change. After spending 4 days in Vegas and coming back, we were having some trouble falling asleep at a reasonable time. And so this is the argument that we had was Scott says it's after a while, which clearly is too many syllables. And I learned it as in a while.
It's three syllables. After a while.
Yeah. If you can't exactly hear that, he's made after into one syllable, which he did clapping as he did last night. No, Allison. No. Clapping out his syllables.
It's after a while. I don't care what everybody says.
It's about halftime clapping.
Exactly.
Okay, easy sound guy. While. All right. Easy there, Mr. Music. Talking about halftime.
So, yeah, Twitter.
One E-N-E, two
usually
E-N-E,
Twitter.
E-N-E,
we could put it on Facebook, too, and ask people on Facebook.
No,
but.
I don't like anybody on Facebook. Forget it.
Harsh.
So, on with the show with your newly minted 43-year-old here.
I have something that I should... Oh,
celebrates
don't.
43. It's not
Why
a big
not?
Thing. It's like 43. Nobody... Nothing.
We celebrated.
What's the next one for me to set 50?
You celebrate all of them. It's always nice.
No, but I mean like a big hoop-de-doo.
A big hoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
We had a pretty good hoop-de-doo.
Well, we got plenty of things on the show. Before we get into that story, I just wanted to mention a service I had heard of. This is not a sponsor or a read right now. I just thought it was really cool. Some friends of ours in a speakers group we won't name was talking about, you know, since people are on the road so much and they don't go to their mailbox and this whole... epidemic of community mailboxes and communities now where you have to get out of your house and walk to
epidemic
it.
Epidemic seems harsh. I'm just going to throw that out there.
It's spreading.
It's down the street.
And there's nothing can stop it.
Just walk down the street.
Epidemic.
It's not an epidemic.
It is literally, we are one community mailbox away from Rene Russo and Dustin Hoffman dropping in here from a helicopter and looking for whoever started this.
It's not even a 2-minute walk to our
mailbox.
I have
to put pants on due to recent court rulings that says my community, with air quotes, is not one to walk around pantless in.
All right, so what's our solution to the...
I mean, what's the point of community if you can't walk around without pants?
There's so many points.
I don't... So, this thing's called a traveling mailbox. I just thought it was really cool. And maybe everybody knows about it, and I'm the last person to know. But this is where you give their address that they give you. Everybody sends their mail to there, and they will scan the outside of each envelope. And then, as they say, you tell them to open it and scan it to send it to you, forward the actual piece of mail to you, or shred it. And you can view all the scans and PDFs whenever you want, so you can see if it's a bill and you can pay it virtually, don't worry about it, or don't pay it at all. And then you can get them to show what's in there and then send you what you need.
Do you think, just a question, do you think that, so I know for some things that use special services like, you know, a UPS or something like that, it would be separate, but some packages come in regular mail. So I just wonder how people deal with that. Like, if you have a package that comes, we're in Canada, so if you have a package that comes Canada Post, and let's say you've used a service like this in Canada, are they going to get your package then too?
Yeah, it'll come to their, the address acts as an address, so I don't know how they pick it up though.
Yeah, I was just interested.
There's got to be a permission thing online to say they're allowed to get it for you.
So when I was running Nummies, I had to open an American, a separate American corporation just because of the laws of importing lingerie from made in overseas into the different countries. So I actually had a separate company in the States. And what I did with them is I had an address like this, like a virtual mailing address. And I would get an email probably like once a week. It wasn't every day because I wasn't getting that much mail. And once a week I'd get it, you know, if a letter had come addressed to the American company, it would sometimes end up in their office. And they would do something like this where they'd say, like, they'd send me a picture of the outside of the letter. Then they, one of the services they offered was they would open it and, you know, scan it to me if I wanted, which was helpful, like in a number of occasions, was very handy to have.
Did it cost you extra if you said scan
it? It was part of the service of having the office there.
Yeah.
So no, it didn't cost me. It wasn't like that, like little tiny thing would cost extra. It was part of the service of basically having this virtual office with an address, because you have to have an address to have a corporation. There has to be some place.
Right.
So part of the virtual office was this idea that they could receive mail and kind of send it out if they needed to. And it was very, very handy. So I do totally understand the need for it. I think a lot of people have a need for it.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's moving into this when you're a traveling nomad, or you're, you know, when things become timely and you're not at home, you're on the road for a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, if you don't have family at home who can open it for you, or an assistant that you can send it to open your mail. If you were away for 2 weeks and I wasn't here, there are things could go untaken care of, right? If you didn't open it.
Which is the time it takes me to get to our community mailbox. It's 2 weeks.
Minutes.
I can't even see it from here.
So
that's
how
far away it is.
Yeah, it's just because of the angle of the window. So as Scott said, yesterday was his birthday. And this article made me realize that I've mispurchased. I'm very sorry. This is what I should have gotten you for your birthday. Although, to be fair, because our shower doesn't have a shower curtain, it had to go in the common shower. The children would have been using it too, which I don't know if such a good idea. But this is from a website that I cannot pronounce right now. And it's an article that says, shower curtains with pockets for phones and tablets so you can stay connected while wet. And it's a picture of a woman in the shower and then the curtains in front of her. And she has not one, but two cell phones in the pockets and an iPad, which is strategically placed so you can't see any of her body in the shower. It says, watch, play with, or listen to your phone or tablet in the shower. 100% waterproof. Even use your camera. Features multiple phone and tablet-sized pockets on outside to hold your device. Different height levels for everyone from tall adults to children. Because that's what kids need while they're in the bath. TV. Touch interaction from the inside of the shower or bath. Change songs. Play games. And scroll through the news. Do you know how much longer our children would be in the shower if they could watch movies and play games in the shower? Like, we already have a lot of teenagers in this house that take very extensive showers. I can't imagine how much longer their showers would be. And there's a camera feature.
I used to have a shower curtain with pouches in it, but you put photos in it. So you turn it into like all your photos, and it's fun type of thing. Until they get wet.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then it's just...
Because water doesn't just hit... I mean, adults, maybe water only hits the inside of the shower curtain. But if you've ever seen a teenager get out of the shower, they just fling the shower curtain. Water gets everywhere. I don't know how safe the device would be.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
And just, you know, have a shower. Just go into your mind. Place you can play music, but do you need to have your phone, like, in the shower curtain to play music?
No.
So...
One step closer to Kramer.
That's right. It's very much so. ESPN's brought to its knees by Reply All Apocalypse. Reply All Apocalypse.
Made up word.
After a while, crocodile. So this is from Deadspin.
And never.
I enjoyed this thoroughly. They said, today we can add ESPN to the fraternity of organizations that has seen its employees thrust into a Reply All Apocalypse. Witness now some of their journey into the hellish depths. The mess started when one employee sent an email with the subject line regarding Inc. 5760131 to a few colleagues who appear to work in a tech department somewhere in the Disney Empire. The colleagues traded a few emails trying to troubleshoot a particular issue when one of them accidentally added an email list that includes every single ESPN employee to the thread. All those employees were treated to this hard-to-parse message. Hi, Jorge. I am seeing that you have marked the incident as pending customer in service now, and pending reason is missing or inaccurate information was none. Can you please let us know what information is missing? Ah, what to do when confronted with such a confusing message on a Wednesday morning? Clearly, the answer is to hit reply all and clear some things up. Ready? I think you have the wrong David Waters here. I'm in sales at 98.7 FM in New York. I think you also have the wrong Karen. I'm Karen Frank at ESPN Magazine. Wrong James also, please remove. Wrong Mike Schmitz as well. Wrong Rodrigo, thanks. Wrong John as well. Nice work, everyone. Now we're really in the well. Next replies, ready? Take me off this list, please. Please remove. Please stop replying all. Please delete me from this thread as well. Next came the trolls. One reply was, best email thread, 10 out of 10. Would reply all again. Next one. At this point, I'm hoping Jorg eventually tells us all what the missing information was. Next reply was, this is the best one. Did you try turning it off and turning it back on? Even some of ESPN's most recognizable talent got in on the fun. Here's Katie Nolan's contribution. I just want to say you absolutely have the right, Katie Nolan, and I'd like to be added to all of these emails going forward. Thanks. She's great. She was joined by senior writer and frequent Around the Horn guest, Mina Kimes. Pete Carroll was right to call a pass instead of a run at the goal line. Have a good morning. And anchor Max Britos had a more positive outlook. I feel this has brought our company closer together, which is quite an achievement. I want to take this time to let all of you know my son won most improved in his basketball league. Elsewhere, desperate attempts to be removed from the email chain raged on. Wrong Michael Collins. Please delete me from the thread. Oh my God, would you please remove me from the list? Hi all, can you please remove me from this email chain? Thanks. Hi all, just want to let you know I can't remove you from the list. Good luck. Remove from the list, please. Then the things began to snowball. This is what happens when IT is outsourced. Remove me from this list. I just wanted to inform the group that a hot dog is 100% a sandwich and that this was a highlight of my morning. Next one. I think you all got. This is spam, just saying. Next one is all caps. I think it's obvious we were all accidentally attached to the email, but when people keep responding, you are just sending more unwanted emails. Stop responding to the thread, people. Next, hi all, can you please remove me from this email chain? Thanks. Next one, Donovan Mitchell or Ben Simmons, rookie of the year. Next, stop the insanity, it's all wrong. Please stop replying all. What's everybody up to this weekend? Next, the reply to that was, I think a few beers and watching how this thread unfolds, Jeffrey. Please send me the schematic stat. How long do you project this will last, Mike? And it goes on and on. When we last checked with all our sources, the email chain was up to 137 messages. Everyone involved in this should be ashamed of themselves, except for Joy, the helpful employee who sent this message under the subject line, how to stop the email madness. And she gives instructions on how to fix it all. Oh, it's beautiful. It's like the old listserv days, too, right? You just get on it and luck out. It's the...
I'm surprised that their employees have a list with every single employee
and
on
it's just
it.
One entry and then ba-boom. Yeah. It really should say, are you sure you want to send this to all 22,000 Disney employees?
It seems like ESPN kind of a powerful list. Like you could just forward it to somebody and they'd have the list of emails for every single person in the company.
But it's a trigger email. So the trigger email sends it out. So you don't see the email until you send it and then it goes...
Yeah, maybe they should put a little two-step verification on there.
A little one-two click. Yeah. There. A little Sierra on there to not make that happen. There's nothing, I think that's what's going to be the problem for millennials, is coming into the workforce, not understanding.
Reply all.
Now, although, is there a text equivalent to that? Just replying to a group text or group, it's like being on Facebook though, where you added to a giant group message.
You get all the updates.
We talked about this a while ago, where one of our friends had an event or is doing something and she decided to make it an all messenger chat. Inviting us to come, and I'm like, why did you do this? It just adds, and she's like, because it gets noticed. I'm like, oh, you're the bane of my existence. And we have a sticker, right? And email reply all. We actually had made a sticker because that's how of an epidemic it is, along with the community mailboxes.
Do you have like a common mistake that you make when you're sending emails? Like, I was thinking, like, what if this guy, like, his, let's say the name of that group is all employees, and his wife's name's Allie. And so, like, you start typing because it finishes, right? Yeah. So you type in AL. Every time you type in AL, like, I send myself a lot of emails. Like, I forward things to myself so I remember. And sometimes, or if you send me something, I'll forward it so I remember that I have to do something with it. I'll add a little note. And a friend of ours, Allison Burke, I warned her when we started working together years ago. I'm like, just so you know, if you ever get an email and it doesn't, like, I'm so sorry. But because when I type my own name, hers, like, comes up very early, especially if I just had sent her an email. Then it's at the top.
Yeah.
So I was very likely to mistakenly send her an email. I also put a shortcut in my phone where if I write the word email, my email address pops up, which seemed like a brilliant idea at the time, except I didn't realize how many times I use the word email. Like, I actually use the word email in emails and texts, like, a lot. Yeah. And every time I got to go stop it. So it's like the bane of my...
I had that one incident. We talked about it a long time ago on the show. When my second and last corporate job out of college, where I was going for my review, my annual review that happens every 6 years. And I went in, it was funny at the time. And I went in and I thought I was going to be fired. Because
you were doing such an excellent job? Because
I didn't do anything for the whole year. And I had emailed my significant other at the time and said, I'm going to be home at lunch probably for good. Like, we done. This is how it was. I was so screwed. And I sat down with my boss, and he said, so, how do you think you did this year? And I'm like, how do you think I did this year? He's like, all good with me. $5,000 raise, good enough? I'm like, yep, sounds about right. And I went back, and I went to write her an email. And I wrote, I can't believe how many idiots I work with. Not only did I not get fired, I got a mother effing raise. We're going out for dinner. God, I love idiots. And then I emailed it to my boss.
I love that story. Yeah, and that's a pretty bad one.
If you've ever tried to pinch the Ethernet cord to stop an email, like it's physically falling down the tube of the cord, I did it. And then you heard a... My boss's office was just down the hall from me, and he opened it. So I started packing my crap up, and I was ready to go for the second time that day, by the way. The second time packing my stuff up, and I see in my peripheral walking towards my desk, and I'm like, wow. And he looks at me and goes, that was funny, and walks away. And I'm like, what?
And if social media had existed, you would have been so famous, because for sure that email would have been like shared. So someone saw that email, they would have put it on Twitter.
That's my faux pas. Now, mind you, our buddy Demetrius, he's on our softball team and comes play poker and stuff. And so he's a dispatcher for Cogeco Cable. So it's the cable and internet provider in our area. And same thing, like with Allison Burke, for you, he's got a Scott on his team, and he dispatches, so he's telling what trucks are going where to go, maintenance and everything else. And every once in a while, I'd get a...
get an email.
Windsor route, close a four, this, and I'll write back, Roger. It's just, at the point, at the start, you're like, hey man, wrong Scott. But after the second time, I think it's a green light to jump into the convo and say, I'm not sure about the Windsor route. Are you sure this is the best course of action? And then everybody else jumps in, so it works really well for me.
I have an article from the New York Daily News. It says, and this is something that had gotten a lot of attention over the last week or so, I guess. Starbucks manager called the cops on black men 2 minutes after they arrived for a business meeting. Two black men who contend they were racially profiled before being arrested in a Philadelphia Starbucks said Thursday they were only there for 2 minutes before a manager called the cops. Rashan Nelson said he was confused when three police officers began talking to him and longtime friend Dante Robinson inside the coffee house over the weekend. Well, initially, as soon as they approached us, they said we had to leave, Nelson told ABC News and Good Morning America. There was no question of it. Was there a problem here between you guys and a manager? What happened? Cell phone video of the two men getting arrested went viral, sparking protests and a swift response from the Seattle-based Java giant. It said both men were afraid for their lives during the arrest, but were not charged with a crime. So the positive thing I think about this story is some of the ways that Starbucks reacted, and that it wasn't a little apology or, you know, also that kind of stuff, but they've actually ended up closing down 8,000 stores for some education for their staff, which I think is important. I don't know if it says if the employee was punished.
Employee's been removed from their role.
Removed from their role.
They stepped down. So with it, and so they rolled out this 8,000 store closure. They announced it very quickly. So I have two things for me. One, I commend Starbucks for how quickly they acted. We talked about immediacy a lot, how quickly you react. It seemed very heartfelt from the CEO, who's done a lot right with them, and you're in the face of doing something wrong here. And when people say, well, it's one store, one manager, doesn't paint it, it does. Your brand is your brand. When I see a logo, what do you think? And currently, people seeing the Starbucks logo, we're thinking about the incident in Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
And so for them to come out and say this is absolutely the wrong thing, and yet he also stood up for the police and said, look, this is, they're called when there's trespassing. Because here, if you want the legal, and I'm not a lawyer, but the legal ramifications of somebody who's dealt with and used to teach human rights and the Charter of Rights and Freedom in Canada, and it's very similar to what's in the States when it comes to how it's written. Any business can ask anybody to leave anytime. In theory, when it comes to certain parts of the law, meaning that if you want to have a civil action about being denied something because of race or religion or anything else, that's another story. But criminally, I can ask the police to remove you from my establishment. It's a private business. Ethically, legal, and everything else, not even remotely close. But so the police, what I'm saying is the police came in and did what they're supposed to do. You ask somebody to leave. They didn't leave. And they removed them. Now, Starbucks acting how they did, showing contrition, showing remorse, and the statements and the quick act, not just saying we're going to look into this and roll out some trainings. Have you ever heard of a place within 36 hours of an incident happening, shutting down the entire chain?
8,000.
Right?
That's
so 8,000 is, I think, is all their corporately owned stores in the States to shut them down. About unconscious bias, even. They're saying is you don't even know you're being biased when you're being biased. And the other hand, the second part for me is, I don't have any damn business having feelings about this at all. That people, whatever judgment people have right now, I never walk into a place and wonder if they're going to let me sit for a minute and wait for you to show up. I've never asked for the code, and I've asked for it at many Starbucks. Ever had them say, are you going to buy something or no? I've never had any of those things happen to me, ever. And for anybody to judge and say, well, they should have done this or these should have done... Walking into a place and being told to get out because of the color of your skin? Like, part of it doesn't matter to me what Starbucks does. I just feel so sad that this is faced by people every single day. And I feel bad even talking about the incident because I'm so privileged. That's an honest, raw emotion for me to feel about this. That I've never had to deal with this. What right do I have to say how it went? And I know on the business side, and we can talk about that, but it just hurts. It hurts my soul when stuff like this happens.
I think the only business lesson is the immediacy and the fact that they took it very seriously. And I think that this is one of the reasons why I love the world that we live in with phones and things like that, because a lot of the time things like this happen, most of the time when things like this happen, nobody knows. And they would have, the two men would have had to deal with being taken wherever they were taken and feeling afraid and losing their freedom when they were doing absolutely nothing wrong. And nobody would ever know about it. And so, although I think that sometimes always having our phones with us can be bad, here's something where it brings light to something that obviously happens. And I'm sure, and Starbucks must know this, if it happens once and you get caught and all this stuff happens, it's happening all the time.
Right.
And so I think that's a good thing. I want to know when there are injustices in the world, because people can do things and, you know, you can act, you can react with your money. And, you know, if they do good and they make changes and they help people, and certainly Starbucks is a company that we've always loved and always supported. And, you know, it could be a one-off thing and none of, but to take the time to close the stores and do the training makes me feel like they're taking it very seriously, as they should. And so that makes me happy. And I think that that's really the lesson, is the reaction has been, so far anyway, I think the reaction has been serious, which is, I think, what was called for.
Right, serious in the media. And they certainly handle it in a way that you should.
Yeah, and hopefully some people who wouldn't have otherwise gotten training in, you know, in bias and discrimination will get that training. And that'll not only make them better employees, but hopefully better people. And they'll be able to learn about, so either unconscious or not, the biases that they have and the privileges that they have. And education in that place can only make things better. It's only going to help open people's eyes. So I think it's really important.
A friend of ours just came out with a book just a week or two ago called Crisis Ready, Melissa Agnes. Great read from what I've read so far. So, and very topical at this moment in time. This is, you don't usually find an Internet of Things, IoT, article that we'd read out of here because it's about as much as reading about augmented virtual reality or something. It's from Business Insider. Hackers once stole a casino's high roller database through a thermometer in a lobby fish tank. Hackers are increasingly targeting Internet of Things devices to access corporate systems using things like CCTV cameras or air conditioning units, according to the CEO of a cybersecurity firm. The Internet of Things refers to devices hooked up to the Internet and has expanded to include everything from household appliances to widgets and power plants. Nicole Egan, the CEO of Darktrace, told the Wall Street Journal CEO Council Conference in London on Thursday, there's a lot of Internet of Things devices, everything from thermostats, refrigeration systems, HVAC, to people who bring in their Alexa devices into the offices. It's just a lot of Internet of Things. It expands the attack surface. Most of this isn't covered by traditional defenses. Egan gave one memorable anecdote about a case Darktrace worked on in which a casino was hacked by a thermometer. The attackers used that to get a foothold in the network. Then they found the high roller database and then pulled that back across the network, out the thermostat, and up to the cloud.
Wow.
Yeah, it's... She also said, with the Internet of Things producing thousands of new devices shoved into the Internet over the next few years, it's going to be an increasing problem. I saw a bank that had been hacked through its CCTV cameras because these devices are bought purely on cost.
I'm glad we're not in securities. I don't think that's a crazy world.
Darktrace. Yeah, that's a lot. All right.
This is from thinknum.com. It says, IBM has nearly 200,000 phantom employees on LinkedIn, and it's not alone. How many do you think we have? Like six?
Yeah.
What's the relative ratio there? According to its 2017 annual report, IBM employs 366,600 people. According to LinkedIn, there are 563,107 people on its site who claim to work for IBM. That's a difference of 196,000 people. When you consider the notion that it's likely some IBM employees aren't even members of LinkedIn, it's clear that many people are claiming to work for IBM. And it says that some of the people, it says an individual may claim to work for a company because he or she did some contract work for the employer, then that's legitimate, but some of them are not legitimate. And it seems to be mostly that people are saying it, like people are lying about it. Now, because there's no real reason for the company to try to appear. It's not like fake reviews or whatever, where it's orchestrated by the company. And it says sales and marketing pitches are common on LinkedIn. That's a good thing. The site was designed to enable business networking. But when someone sends a pitch as a representative of a company he or she doesn't legitimately work for, trust in LinkedIn ultimately erodes. And they have a couple other examples with differentials, and some of them are quite high. Like it says, for Google, that it's they have 73,000 employees with some odds and ends. And on LinkedIn, 133,000 people say they work for Google. So that's 80.29% increase of fakies.
Ouch.
It's a lot of people. Amazon is on here too, although Amazon's the opposite. More employees, less LinkedIn. Walmart, like it's pretty crazy. What do you think about that? Is it like a fake personal branding cheat, or
Or they just don't, they do the one job for them or whatever that is for a week, and they keep it as present because this isn't about past jobs. This is people who listed it as present occupation. Look at the names that they look at the ones that they've pointed out. There's a reason why you pick all these places.
JP Morgan, Siemens, Amazon, Wells Fargo, GE, PWC, Hewlett Packard. Like, these are huge companies. So McDonald's, I don't know if that counts, but
it's like putting on, shared the stage with.
Yeah, I guess.
My bio, right? I just shared the stage with Kara Swisher from Recode, who's a great, incredible tech journalist. And I'm like, is that my LinkedIn profile? Maybe. But that's the point where it's just like, it's like LinkedIn's the resume now.
So you pad it with the same
95% ethics. Of people lie on LinkedIn. The other 5% are just filthy liars. Right? That's how it is. But that's the thing. It's outright misrepresenting where you work. That's, yeah.
Well, and so here's one little side note. It says that on LinkedIn, having worked at the same company as someone else makes adding that person as a connection on LinkedIn a relatively simple two-step process. So as opposed to the very long process of adding a stranger. So if you wanted to work, let's say, at IBM.
Or sell something to somebody at IBM.
And you wanted some contacts, listing IBM as a past or present employer would make it much easier to connect with those people. And when you work at a company as big as that, it's not like you're going to be like, nobody named Steve works here. Like, you're going to know, yeah. You're going to be like, oh, that must be.
Marketing Inc. as your employer, we would know. We would know you didn't work here.
Right. But like at a huge company, you don't know. Yeah, like the email that we talked about at the beginning, like there's that tens of thousands and they're joking. It's not the right this person. But obviously many people have the same name. And in a huge company, you rarely see the people that in every department of a company. It'd be impossible. So it makes it very easy. And that part bothered me because the idea of starting out that way, like for people to think that they need to cheat in that way, I just, you know, people are going to find out. Like, in the end, if you never worked at IBM and you get some great job because you lied on LinkedIn, eventually everything comes back to us. Like, you just say what you can do or focus on that.
Exactly. Don't forget, the new version of Unmarketing is out on Audible now. Have a listen to the Scott and Allison show.
Scott and Allison show.
And soon to be out on Audible as well as Unbranding. And? This podcast is now on Spotify. I'm not sure if that helps anybody. If you're listening to this already, then you've already picked your preferred platform. But Spotify has the On Podcast now, so...
That's cool. That makes me feel cooler.
It does. Just about a half cup cooler.
So I have some questions. I have a question for this episode. And it's from James Marler II. And he was in our live feed. He was watching the live feed.
And he's also the one that does our show notes.
And he's also the one that does our show notes, which I should probably know. I didn't know he was the second... Cool. Fancy. Would you like to hear the question?
Yep.
Okay. So here's my question. Is there anywhere that you, Scott, document your progress from just a guy on Twitter to, well, who you are now? Well-paid, private jet-setting speaker, and viral sensation? That's the question. So he just wants to know if we've ever written about or if you have written about your journey. So I thought we could tell people. Other people might want to know that.
Yeah, it's in a book on marketing.
Yeah, in the new version, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the only answer you have? You don't have like a little bit more? Is it going to be this kind of an interview where
it's like pulling teeth. No, but the thing about the journey is that it's not five steps, right? It's a combination. I always say this, right? It's a combination of luck, timing, skill, and Allison, right? Like anybody else. That's how it works. And if you don't get one of those four, it ain't going to work for you. But there's so many things. Like, I just can't say that, well, I tweeted 22,000 times and then I pitched a book to her, which is, if you want to boil it down, that's what it came down to. But What were the tweets?
You're also really good when you're on stage.
Right. And also, yeah, I'm not too shabby pretty talented. On stage. And I just, the journey is certainly something, but it's like, it's not a GPS point.
No.
You're saying just get to here. And
I was thinking, sorry, I interrupted you.
But it's working within the confines of what you've got at that moment and making it work. Like I don't want to tell people that, you know what? Because I literally am living my dream from when I was 12. And I'm so happy for it. I feel so incredible about it every day. But to sit there and just tell somebody, hey, just do this, I think it's a disservice to luck, timing, skill, and Allison.
I was thinking about like the idea of stories, like Facebook stories mm-hmm. and Instagram stories, and this idea of like, following someone along through this journey that sometimes we love, like when someone we look up to, then seeing their kind of regular everyday, you know, so when we talk about traveling or we talk about planes or hotels, like those are such a big part of your life. And sometimes that comes up and that's sort of part of the process, right? People see you on stage, but how did you get on stage or what's the best part or what's the worst part? Yeah. And so I was thinking about this kind of idea of journaling and this like, and we've done that in the books, right? Because the books have happened every sort of year and a half as really... The books are the journal of sort of not only conceptually, but because we're really personal in them, there's also personal sort of journey things in the books as well. And I was thinking about that as we kind of are in the digital age of this idea of like that online journaling, like almost stories as kind of like a journal of, you know, what you did this week, or not just seeing you on stage, but, you know, what was the kind of the process? Because I think really if people want to learn about how you got to this point, it's really to read the books, because there's a lot in there that's personal about the journey, right?
More personal than most of them. So it works well.
Yeah, I think so.
You want to get the kind of the blueprint of it, because there isn't one answer. There isn't even five answers or 10 answers. It's just, you know, and because it can look at, you know, joining things like, because Twitter put me on the map. And then, but, you know, look at now, and there's barely a mention of social media in my bio at all.
Yeah.
And that shift was conscious. That shift was on purpose. And that's how do you give a lesson on understanding a trend and seeing where it's going, and where do you position yourself in it? Because if I can give any advice to anybody listening right now that wants to do their own thing or create their own brand or be on stage or, you know, be an author or be anything else, is building that platform, that you have to have a group of people who want to hear what you have to say, right? And building that first, because everybody thinks it's after. Well, once I get a book or once I do talks, then I can do it. No, it's reversed. You create the voice that creates the demand, because the voice creates the demand by the audience listening to it. And that's where we all forget that. And every time I speak to speakers and stuff, well, how'd this happen? I'm like, well, I worked my ass off. I didn't stop building a community. And people don't
want
that.
And it wasn't from walking to the mailbox or anything with his pants on.
That's ridiculous. I wouldn't do that. Start that again. He says, you can have your dream, just walk to the mailbox. I'm like, sorry, man, can't do it. But community takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes a lot of giving. And you may not receive, and that's the point. And that's what I did. And that's what I've done multiple times, is to be able to say, because I believe in the strength of a community. I believe in the strength of your community. You just have to be able to give to it unconditionally. And that, I think, it takes time, and you have to give. Two things.
People don't really like both those things.
They won't buy a course about.
No.
You know what I mean? It's going to be called, this will take you 10 times longer, and you may get nothing.
Yeah.
$29.95 by now, right?
Not going to sell very well.
It's not going to hit the bestseller list, or it's not going to get downloaded very much, but that's the truth.
Yeah. I told someone once that if I had to give someone the 10 steps to becoming an author, I wouldn't start your own lingerie company.
Right.
And like, that's how life works. Like, that's the steps. You want to hear my steps, I can tell you what they are. And I do think that like the online world has given me some journaling. Like, I have old posts from Nummies like saved, and I like old blog posts when people used to write blog posts and things like that, where I can read what was going on then, and because of the writing's personal. And I like that. I like that I can kind of see the journey, but at the same time, like, there's no, I couldn't possibly tell, the story's weird. Like, it's all over the place, and, you know, it's back and forth, and the core strengths are the same, but it's very varied. And I think that's for everyone we talk to, it's so varied. And I think that's good. I like that, because it's much more honest than saying, we'll just go do this and, you know, ta-da, they'll come out the other side, right?
That's why I got a problem with a lot of those things that teach you. Well, you need just this, just this, just this. And there's a whole, everybody has a unique set of circumstances.
Yeah.
Unique talents, unique weaknesses, unique budgets, unique
time.
You need expenses, right? So if your monthly cost to live is $10,000, and me teaching you how to make $500 a month isn't going to help you. But if your monthly expenses are $500, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the answer is read the book.
Yeah. The books are very personal, so I think that's like the podcast. I think you get a glimpse from that. Plus, you're right. In the second edition of Unmarketing, we went back and updated some chapters that talked about the book tour and those kinds of things, you know, and then that hasn't really stopped. So it's kind of trajectory, sort of.
400 keynotes almost.
It's a lot of keynotes.
Ooh, 8 years.
You're doing great. Thank you for the question, James.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. I gotta go take a shower with my iPad.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.